Hey, Pittsburgh, this is Eric Harrison coming to you with a heart full of gratitude on WRCT Pittsburgh. Rock on, Yinzers.
I'm Andrew Saul, Commissioner of Social Security. Beware of telephone scammers pretending to be government employees. Real Social Security employees will never threaten you. Callers threatening you with arrest or other legal action and demanding money are not from us. If you receive a call like this, hang up. Do not provide them with any form of payment or information. Report the call at oig.ssa.gov.
WRCT Pittsburgh.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Well, it happened yesterday just after we were done filming our Thursday show. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson has been confirmed by the Senate 53-47. She will be the first black woman on the Supreme Court. It is a major deal, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it today because we've basically spent the time already. We've talked about her background. We've talked about her qualifications. We've talked about some of the most disgusting confirmation hearings that we've seen. We've talked about Republicans saying they're not going to vote for her without really being able to explain why they're not going to vote for her. We've talked about all of it, and now she's been confirmed. And indeed, it was a 53-47 vote. It was the 48 Democrats, the two independents that caucus with Democrats, and the three Republicans that we knew were going to support her because they said so. And that was Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Senator Susan Collins of Maine. No other Republican supporting one of, if not the most qualified Supreme Court nominees in as long as I've been covering Supreme Court confirmation hearings. And when compared to the nine justices on the court up until now, as qualified as any of them. So congratulations to her. We knew she'd be confirmed, and now the next battle is going to be what happens if Joe Biden gets another pick after the midterms and Republicans have taken control of the Senate. Mitch McConnell was asked sometime in the last 24 hours, if you guys take the Senate in November and Joe Biden gets another pick, would you even hold confirmation hearings? And Mitch McConnell declined to answer. And it's the same partisan nonsense we've been talking about for a long time. So that's it for now. The right decision made. Judge Jackson will soon be Justice Jackson on the court. This is also a bit of good news. The Department of Justice is finally going to start a formal investigation into Donald Trump's 15 boxes of records that he had secreted away at Mar-a-Lago before they were turned over to the National Archives. The Washington Post reporting, the Justice Department has begun taking steps to launch an investigation into former President Donald Trump's improper removal of presidential records to Mar-a-Lago, some of which were labeled top secret. Remember, we couldn't vote for Hillary, or we shouldn't, because she couldn't be trusted with secret information. Trump's flushing documents, incinerating documents, eating documents, hiding away documents at Mar-a-Lago. The people who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss an ongoing investigation said the probe remained in the early stages. It's not yet clear if the Justice Department officials have started reviewing the materials in the boxes or if they are seeking to interview those who might have seen them or been involved in assembling and moving them. The news comes as the department faces increasing political pressure to disclose its plans. On Thursday, House Oversight Chairwoman Carolyn Maloney, Democrat from New York, accused the Justice Department of obstructing her committee's investigation into the 15 boxes of records that Trump took with him. So, number one, it's about time. Number two, this is nothing other than step like 0.1, but at least it's something, and we'll see if and where it goes anywhere. And then again, I mean, I gave you some of these numbers during previous investigations into Trump. With Watergate, it was 783 days from the break-in to Nixon's resignation. And even then, it was only that quick because Nixon resigned. Here, we have a situation where Trump is no longer president, and we are only in the early stages. It could be a very, very long time. Iran-Contra, from Reagan announcing the investigation to the end of the congressional investigation, was 254 days. These things do take a long time. I don't have high hopes. I don't believe Trump is going to do a day in prison. You guys already know I think that. But it does look that, you know, even in the best cases where something provably wrong was done, it still takes a really long time. Merrick Garland's got to get his act together. And as a reminder, Joe Biden should have nothing to do with this, and he's not getting involved. That's the correct thing. As we spoke about yesterday, Joe Biden should do nothing to encourage or interfere with an investigation into Hunter Biden. Joe Biden should do nothing to interfere with or encourage an investigation into anything that Donald Trump has done. But the Justice Department is starting, and that's good news, and it will likely mean more legal fees for Donald Trump. I want to talk about a ridiculous performance by Pennsylvania Republican Senate candidate Mehmet Oz. And this is the guy, many know it as Dr. Oz. We are doing everything we can to just refer to him as Mehmet Oz, because saying Dr. Oz almost, it's like it's useful to him in some way. Oz is running in Pennsylvania. As I mentioned, the leading Democratic primary opponent is a guy named John Fetterman, who we're going to try to get on the show. Very interesting candidate. And Mehmet Oz apparently wanted to make the point that groceries are expensive. This is part of the inflation story that Republicans have been telling. But Republicans don't want to tell the story in good faith. There's been inflation. Gas prices are high. But it's not Joe Biden's fault. This is happening globally. But Republicans want to tell the story that it is Joe Biden's fault. So what Mehmet Oz did is make a very performative trip to a local grocery store. And his point at the grocery store is, look how expensive it is to buy some vegetables. This is actually an opportunity for Mehmet Oz to do something useful at the grocery store, but he doesn't. And I'm going to explain that in a second. Let's first take a look at the video.
I thought I'd do some grocery shopping. I'm at Wegner's, and my wife wants some vegetables for crudite, right? So here's a broccoli. That's $2. Not a ton of broccoli there. Here's some asparagus. That's $4. Yep. Carrots. That's $4 more. That's $10 of vegetables there. And then we need some guacamole. That's $4 more. And she loves salsa. Yeah, there's salsa there. $6. Must be a shortage of salsa. Guys, that's $20 for crudite, and this doesn't include the tequila. I mean, that's outrageous. And we got Joe Biden to thank for this.
Okay, so he makes a show. By the way, do we believe he's really there shopping? I don't. He makes a show of picking up a $2 piece of broccoli and a $4 asparagus and a $4. It's an enormous bag of carrots for four. I think it's a 5-pound bag. $4 guacamole, $6 salsa. So it's $20 for his crudite ingredients. So first of all, salsa for crudite? No, that's the first red flag here. That makes absolutely no sense. Why are you getting salsa for crudite? But that's a culinary critique, but it exposes that this is probably all BS. But secondly, it's obviously super staged to make a political point. He's not out really shopping for crudite to make for his guests. It's absurd. It's like when Mitt Romney went out to shop and all he had in his cart was just boxes and boxes of yogurt and I think like seltzer. It was really weird. It wasn't believable. It was during his presidential campaign. But this is really a missed opportunity. Instead of complaining about prices and buying things that don't even make sense for the dish you claim to be making, as a doctor, and here's where it is relevant that he's a medical doctor, he should be explaining to people how to more economically buy vegetables, which most Americans aren't getting enough of, buying too many processed foods. Now, he's a doctor who's promoted quack cures on his show, cures for colds that are completely unproven, all sorts of weird supplements and different things. And then when he actually has an opportunity to talk people in a real way about nutrition, he talks about inflation and tries to blame Joe Biden. He could have gone and said, hey, you know what? Instead of processed foods, here's how you can get real foods cheaply and make them last. This would be value. If any member of Congress did this, Republican or Democrat, I would applaud them. This is a big problem in the United States. People don't know what's healthy. They don't understand how to economically have healthier foods. Food products, highly processed, are promoted to them. He could go in and go, see this monstrous 5-pound bag of carrots? It's $4. And that's a good deal. Cut up some of the carrots, get hummus for $3. That's a great snack. Take some carrots and grate them onto your salads to get more, whatever, I don't remember. I'm not a doctor. Is it vitamin A? Whatever carrots have. Beta carotene. Take some carrots, put a little avocado or olive oil or even canola oil on them, salt and pepper, roast them. Now you've got great sides for your lunches instead of potato chips for the entire week. That's a great use of a 5-pound bag of carrots. Instead, it's a confused guy claiming to be making crudité with salsa. Hey, let me tell you about vegetables that are the best value in the grocery store. We should all be doing more to eat healthy. Get yourself sweet potatoes. Get the bulk bag, roast them alongside your carrots. Keep them as a side dish. For breakfast, get some eggs. Toss some cubed up already cooked sweet potato. Fry an egg. And then have a handful of blueberries or, you know, whatever the case may be. These are ideas to buy in larger quantities, don't have food waste, and eat healthier than a highly processed whatever it is, you know, the granola bars or whatever it is you're having for, you know, sugary cereal, whatever. It's really a wasted opportunity for a doctor to really provide something of value and show that he's the type of voice we should be saying, we need more of that in the Senate. This is exactly what we need more of in the Senate. He does something cheap. It adds nothing to the conversation other than playing the same political games. That's Mehmet Oz running in Pennsylvania. Let me know your thoughts. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. We'll take a quick break. What a Friday program we have for you today. The David Pakman Show is, of course, made possible by viewers like you through our membership program. Listeners like you, you can sign up at joinpakman.com. It's quick. It's easy. If you already have a membership, you can also now gift memberships by checking the box that says, this is a gift, funny enough, as you sign up. And then we will give your gift subscription to someone on our waiting list currently. 600 people waiting for membership. So it's a beautiful number. Let's hear from some people in the audience. We do these calls now via Discord. You can find our Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Why don't we start today? This is interesting. Let's start with Aliyah from the Faroe Islands. We've never had a Faroe Islands caller before. Aliyah, you're on the air. What's going on? No, boy. Aliyah, don't let us down. Aliyah from the Faroe Islands, please unmute and we'll be able to chat. Well, that's a shame. That would have been interesting. Let's go instead to Brian from Phoenix. Brian from Phoenix, you're on the air.
Hi, David.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing amazing. I wanted to first appreciate you flouting the pushback and sticking with the anhistoric pronunciation. I think it's...
oh, boy.
I appreciate you going your own way on that.
All right, fair.
I'm wondering if you believe in the long term it would be a more beneficial, more progressive outcome to remove the filibuster altogether and sort of have the Senate answer to the voters for whatever legislation is able to be passed in a 50-50 Senate, or if you think that that would lead us in the opposite direction, in a less progressive direction?
Good question. So here's my view on this. If I don't think about this strategically, the filibuster doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The filibuster fundamentally seems anti-democratic. So if there were no political considerations, I would say, let's get rid of the filibuster altogether. In practical terms, I'm aware that if Democrats completely nuke the filibuster, at some point it'll come back to haunt Democrats. And part of the reason why is that the Senate is fundamentally anti-democratic. And what I mean by that is we have 100 senators. No matter how many people live in any particular state, That's the state has two senators. And so there are senators that represent millions and millions and millions of people. And there's senators that represent, I mean, I don't know what the Wyoming population is now. I think it's like 700,000. So like each Wyoming senator, in a sense, represents 350,000 people, which gives disproportionate power to low population states, which are typically conservative. So I don't love the filibuster. I think it doesn't make sense. And I would be fine getting rid of it if we were to somehow fix the anti-democratic nature of the Senate, which doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon, because that's the way the system works.
One semi-follow-up question, very quick. Would you support adding states for that in the form of like splitting California or adding Puerto Rico?
I am open to adding states, but it would not be specifically for that reason. I think that sometimes it would make sense. There's a lot of proposals. I mean, I think Puerto Rico should be a state if it wants to be. I think there are a number of different arguments for splitting up California. But for me, it's more about, does it make sense for economic reasons? Does it make sense for other reasons, not just as a political strategy? Although as a political strategy, it would almost certainly help Democrats.
Awesome. Thanks, David.
My pleasure. That's a meaty phone call. I like it. Let's go next to Austin from Miami. Austin from Miami, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just kind of wondering what you think about what's going to happen in midterm elections. I mean, I'm not looking too much at like polls at this point, but just from my perception, I feel like Democrats are getting a lot less popular. A lot of people, you know, are blaming Biden for the gas bill or the gas prices. And I just feel like if they don't do anything about it, they're going to stay very unpopular. I was wondering if you thought that they were either aware of it or like what you would recommend Democrats do.
I think Democrats are aware of it. So there's two sides to this, Austin. The first part of it is historically, if you can do something to turn off the Discord blings, that would be really great. I don't know if you're using push to talk or if you haven't silenced notifications, but I would love your help with that. So on the one hand, for historical reasons, typically when a party wins the White House, then the next midterms aren't good for them. So like historically speaking, Democrats should lose at least control of the House or Senate in November. On the other hand, we have this situation where in 2016 and 2020, you had a lot of Trumpists voting who never voted before Trump. They only got involved in politics because of Trump. And it remains an open question whether there is going to be a sort of a disappearance of many of those individuals, and they're not even going to vote in November. The other question is, we know COVID has killed more Republicans than Democrats. To what effect will the partisan death gap of COVID affect Republicans? So Democrats should be losing historically. Joe Biden is also getting blamed for stuff that's not his fault, like gas prices. Those are not good things for them. But I think it's such a unique midterm that it remains to be seen. I don't really have a prediction.
Yeah. Do you think that though, like certain I don't know. Do you see kind of the new like decriminalization of marijuana bill is like something that they might be putting forth to kind of reclaim some popularity? Because I just feel like from the perspective, like they have not really gotten anything done with like the infrastructure bill being gutted, and they're not really doing anything popular like as of right now or making an effort to.
I think that time is quite short, and it would be really great for Democrats if they want to do well. To try to get something else major done. But to be perfectly frank, it's not seeming to me like they're going to be able to do it. So they're going to have to run on convincing people based on what's already happened. And that's quite frankly, it seems like that's going to be a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I kind of just wish that they had more control over, getting policies that are popular. But obviously, there's a lot of, red tape within the party.
Yeah, and there's also a limited amount of political capital. The one thing I will say is I don't really think Joe Biden has much of an interest in doing student loan forgiveness, but he still could look at doing something like that. And maybe the new moratorium on payments until August is him saying, well, maybe in August I'll do some student loan forgiveness, which will help us in November. That was Pat's idea on a recent bonus show. I don't know, but I think it's an interesting question.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. I definitely agree that Biden should be doing some kind of like emergency kind of catch up, because I feel like he's just catching a lot of flack for inflation and gas. And like I obviously don't have like any like concrete evidence on this, but just from like what I've seen living in like Florida, I'm at the University of Florida, but I'm from Miami. Just a lot of like anti-Biden sentiment. Let's go, Brandon is everywhere. You know, yeah. I'm just a little worried for the future.
You're right to be worried, Austin. Thank you so much for the call. Let's go next to Jamie from Georgia. Jamie, welcome.
Hi, thank you for welcoming me.
My pleasure.
So, David, what I wanted to talk today about was the rise of socialism in the U.S. According to this Axios poll, apparently it's like a 49% to 46% split between favorably viewing socialism and to capitalism. I don't know which way it is, but either way, what are your thoughts on the rise?
I have to tell you, I don't know what you're talking about. So you're saying the rise of socialism's popularity, are you saying?
I'm sorry, I don't think I explained this very well. I mean, like, the rise of socialism being viewed in a more favorable light compared to capitalism being viewed in a very positive light. For instance, during the Red Scare, in the U.S., socialism was viewed very negatively compared to capitalism.
Okay, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know that you're correct that socialism is seen less unfavorably in the U.S. now than it has been in a long time. So let's agree that that's going on, and the specific numbers maybe we don't have in front of us. I don't have any particular hot take on that. I mean, listen, here's what's going on. The version of capitalism that exists in the United States has failed many, many millions of people. When we look at wages, when we look at access to just basics that people need to live, we have hunger in the United States, there's no reason for that, et cetera, et cetera. It's natural that people would say, wow, this isn't working, what else is there? And one of the other things that there is, in theory, is socialism. So it's not shocking to me, given the version of capitalism that exists here, that there would be people looking for other things. As far as socialism goes, I'm not personally a socialist. That doesn't mean anything in particular. But my point is, I'm not like looking to usher in socialism and socializing the means of production and socialized ownership of businesses. I'm not looking to do that. I think a lot of the people that now view socialism more favorably also aren't looking to do that. And they don't actually know what socialism is. So that's sort of my take. Not surprising, people are looking for alternatives. A lot of them don't really know what socialism is. A lot of the people that claim to be socialists aren't really. Like Bernie says he's a democratic socialist. Maybe he is, but his policy is one of social democracy, which is a regulated capitalism. So I think there's some confusion and there's some logic to it as well.
Yes, I think that's a very good take, Pac-Man.
Thank you.
I will say, yes, the U.S. in the U.S., what is considered socialism has largely been incredibly stunted, of course, due to the Red Scares and uber reactionaryism that's fostered in the U.S. Culture. But I think that a good way to combat this would be to educate people on what socialism really is.
Sure.
Social democracy as not a form of socialism, but as sort of like a window into socialism. When people see that this little nugget of socialism, something that's barely even socialism, not even the economic policies, but just the everything else policies of social democracy, I think that people will be like, hey, so this is just a nugget of socialism. This is really good. If we have this, but on a much larger scale and in a way that we make sure does not end up like the Soviet Union or China, then we can have socialism. And I think that socialism will have even more of a boom than it already is experiencing.
So I don't agree with you personally. I think that having social democracy would lead us towards being like the Northern European countries, which are still capitalist countries. But what I will say, what you just said is the view of a lot of incrementalist socialists. So for example, there's a streamer named Ian Vaush. And when I spoke to Ian Vaush, he said, I'm a socialist, but if we're ever going to have socialism, it's going to go through social democracy so that people realize, hey, this is the right direction to go in. So the view you're espousing, while it's not one I agree with, is a valid and a widely held view among actual socialists. And I appreciate you making that point.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
That's about all I had. So thank you for calling on me, David. See you next time.
All right. Bye. We will see you next time. Appreciate the call. Let's go next to, why don't we go from Donnie from, is it pronounced Visalia? Visalia?
It's Visalia.
Visalia. What state is that in?
It's in California.
Oh, beautiful.
I called you before.
Did I also not know where it was the last time we spoke?
Yeah, I probably should change it to Tulare County. Last time I mentioned Trump mentioning the 1917 pandemic. Being with the connected to QAnon, that's what I called last time.
Beautiful. Well, what's on your mind today?
Anyway, I was wondering what your opinion was of Adam Schiff as for president. I'm not sure if his policies are really progressive or not, but I'm curious if you think he'd have any interest, how you think he would do.
Yeah. So Adam Schiff, I find to be a interesting guy, a very smart, great speaker, not the most progressive guy on the face of the earth. And he will bump up against anti-Semitism as a Jewish gentleman. I think that I were to look in that direction, I'd be more interested in Jamie Raskin than Adam Schiff. I think Jamie Raskin is really a progressive activist. And so if you said Schiff or Raskin, in thinking about the kind of Jewish white guy with that sort of profile, I think I would lean more Raskin than Schiff.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, that's all I had for you.
All right. Beautiful. Short and sweet. I appreciate the call. Let's see. Let's go next to Nug Wrangler. And the thing about Nug Wrangler is Nug Wrangler is a professional memer, but Nug's phone calls are not at the same caliber as the memes. But what's going on, Nug?
Hello, David.
Okay.
So I was reading a piece over the American Prospect, a progressive news magazine, and there was a piece there talking about how profit rates should be included in economic data, not just wages, unemployment rate, prices, etc. What do you think about this, and how do you see things changing if profits were actually studied and included in economic data?
Aren't they in a way? So let me see if I can think that through. So you're saying, okay, we have a lot of different ways of measuring how an economy is doing. We can look at the unemployment rate. We can look at wages. We can look at GDP. We can look at inflation, consumer confidence. You're saying let's include corporate profits in that list of metrics?
Yeah, that way we could gauge maybe if there's profit gouging, stuff like that. The piece I was reading was also talking about how it's not really studied, so it's hard to, I guess, use that as a measurement, even if it should be somehow.
I am always into having more information rather than less. I think you're onto something, which is it's a hard thing to calculate in the sense that are we talking about the average profit margin? Are we talking about dollars? Is it weighted based on company size? I think if I knew a little more about what exactly would be measured, I could give you a more definite opinion about it. But I'm always for having more information rather than less.
Yeah, all those things mentioned, could be possible. It definitely is an area of study that should be looked into.
I agree with you.
There should also be some kind of measurement of how many times people are using their toilet.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a president, okay, you're playing clips. Yeah, listen, if you have a regime where people are flushing 10 to 15 times, that can't possibly be as good as if people are only flushing once. I agree with you.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Thank you. All right. Nug Wrangler with a better phone call than normal. I like it. Coming in with the sound clips. Very, very good. Okay. Let's go next to Jess in Oregon. Jess, welcome.
Hello, David.
How are you?
I'm just doing so wonderful. I called a few weeks ago from Florida, from mm-hmm. Gainesville, Florida.
Right.
And I've made my move. So now I'm here.
Now, are you in Oregon or Oregon?
I've been here about 3 weeks and not heard one person call it Oregon.
So you can't say for sure, but it sounds like you're in Oregon.
Yeah, it's. I think that's where Eugene is in Oregon. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So, I was wondering, I would love to get your take on if this is a good potential middle ground to pro-life and pro-abortion rights activists.
So have you ever met a pro-abortion person? I never have. Pro-abortion to me means you're going around trying to get people to have abortions. I've never seen that.
Right.
Pro-choice, you mean? Pro-choice.
Pro-abortion rights?
Okay.
Particularly. Okay.
Got it.
So if we're talking about people who are for abortion rights and people on the other side who think that that is murdering babies, you know, it's kind of hard to find a middle ground. But see, I'm thinking of it like, why do we keep talking about that particular aspect of abortion when there are a lot of other aspects around this that I think we can agree on, like young mothers who, you know, maybe would rather have abortion if they can't get abortion than, you know, add like federal funding for young mothers to these bills that restrict abortion rights.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. One of the things we've talked about many times is you can't both say you should be forced to have a kid and then not provide any support for the kid to people who are not financially in a good position to have a kid. Absolutely.
Right. 'Cause yeah. You know, if the other solution is get rid of the kid before it's born and you can't do that, okay, well then help me out if I'm forced to have a kid, you know?
Yeah, this is the broader hypocrisy of an insane amount of concern for, you know, clumps of cells 4 weeks into a pregnancy and then total disregard for babies after they're born. I mean, that's a long-term hypocrisy we've seen.
But see, instead of like, I know you and I and many other people who share that same view, we kind of get stuck on like, oh, you pro-life people are being so hypocritical. Instead, be like, hey, pro-life people, what about this idea? Do you agree with this?
Sure.
You
know, no, like, it should be proposed. Absolutely. The problem is most cases, if Democrats try to bring that up during a debate over abortion, Republicans would say, that's not this bill. If you want to propose a different bill, propose it. But right now we're talking about this bill. So that's the political strategy question you have to deal with.
Really?
Yeah.
So they think that that's a different situation. Really?
Well, they would say Republicans would say, that's just not part of our bill. If you want to propose that, propose it. But you've got to make your own bill.
Uh-huh. Because restricting abortion isn't a direct cause to that effect.
Oh, of course. You're right about that. You're not wrong that it's, of course, related. Okay. All right. Jess, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. What I'm saying is the Republicans wouldn't allow it into their bill. They would say, here's what we want to do about abortion. Here's what's right to do about abortion. If you have other ideas that you want to propose, by all means, go ahead and propose them. Let's take a very quick break. If you're holding, just keep holding because we're going right back to the phones in a moment. Let's go back to the phones, and by phones, I mean Discord. It's not really phones, but for some reason, we keep calling them phones. I guess they are calls. They're Discord calls. DavidPakman.com/Discord. Let's go. Where are we going to go next? Because it's crazy what's happening on the Discord lines today. Let's try Alex from Spokane, Washington. You're on the air.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
So I wanted to touch on this topic. Given the Democratic leadership, you have Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn, and there tends to be this conventional wisdom that progressive Democrats can only win in districts like Ayanna Pressley's And that if we were to turn the Democratic Party toward that more progressive direction, that we would lose nationwide. And there is a piece on Jacobin about this, given the fact that rural voters have really turned toward the Republican Party. And the reality is that in 2022, I have seen a candidate that has run a totally grassroots people-powered congressional bid. And that's Derek Marshall. He's running in the 23rd Congressional District down in the high desert of Southern California. I was just curious if you've been keeping tabs on the midterms and if there's any candidates that have like struck your eye as candidates running in rural areas, places that are maybe unconventional, so that we can continue to fight for issues that are affecting people who are maybe most disproportionately affected by poverty and by the day-to-day struggle.
I can't say specifically that there's progressive rural candidates that I would be able to sort of like recommend to anybody. But my recommendation would be if you are in a rural area, find out who's running, because my capacity on the show to know about every candidate running everywhere is very limited. And my ability to interview all of them is also very limited. But we're going to have very soon, I was interviewed by Farron Cousins in Las Vegas recently, and he's going to be publishing an interview we did sort of about exactly this issue, which is how do you deal with figuring out what races to get involved in? And I'm going to be talking about it on the show as well. But you know, unfortunately, it's beyond the scope of my show to tell everybody who to support, et cetera, et cetera. But there's no shortage of great candidates out there, and it's great that you're paying attention.
Thank you.
All right. There we go. Very, very important message for sure. Let's go next. Where are we going next here? What about, I don't know, how about Billy from Jersey? Billy, you're on the air.
Hey, David. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Billy.
Okay, quick question.
Please.
Can you describe to me what a woman is? I'm kidding. Actually, my question is, when you think of somebody who's radical in behavior, it's somebody who may be erratic. How would you describe a radical type of a person?
Is it an erratic radical?
Like decisions they make and things they do. Because at a Trump rally, he'll come out, the former president will say, a radical, do-nothing Democrats in the same sentence, right? Which means they're all over the place. But they're also doing completely nothing.
Billy, like there's a crazy squealing in the background, and it sounds like you got a TV on, and it sounds like you're on speaker. Is there? Can you help us out here so we're on the same team rather than on opposite teams?
Sorry. Let me see.
So, Billy, tell me, is this like a word game or a political question I'm trying to figure out? Are we just playing games with the words erratic and radical, or what's going on?
Oh, it's when you call somebody a radical.
Oh, boy. All right, Billy, I'm going to let you go. Wow, it's crazy what's happening over at Billy's place. It's really quite a scene. It's hard to even keep up with all of it. Let's go to Mike in northeastern Connecticut. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about ranked choice voting.
Okay.
And why Massachusetts didn't pass that in the last vote.
Did that not pass in Massachusetts? I don't remember. There's so many ballot initiatives, I can't remember all of them. I don't know why it didn't pass, if that's the case. But I've spoken about ranked choice voting a number of times. There's a number of different configurations of it, single transferable vote and many others. I think the most important thing when it comes to ranked choice voting is voters need to be confident that there is no possible way that someone who really doesn't have a plurality of voters wanting them to be the winner ends up as the winner. And it's sort of like a mathematical problem. And we've done a number of interviews on this. There's a number of systems that ensure that and that accomplish that. And it's generally speaking a system I'm in favor of, with the caveat that I would like to see ranked choice voting and a public financing of elections and campaign finance reform, because not only is it important to generate votes for third parties and additional parties, it would also be great for the main two parties not to have such an overwhelming advantage when it comes to the money. So I think you need to do both together. I'd also love to see a national popular vote. All of these things together feel like pipe dreams, but they're the ideal that I've sort of envisioned.
Now, do you feel the voters would be competent enough to fill out anything more than a regular ballot?
I don't know. I mean, we do have a competence and education problem in the United States. I'm pretty confident that if people just get a piece of paper and it says there are five candidates, rank them 1 to 5, that most voters would be able to do that correctly. I'm modestly confident in that.
Okay, great. And do you ever touch on the right to repair? That was another Massachusetts ballot initiative.
I'm generally speaking in favor of the right to repair. I've heard the arguments that right to repair would allow people to get vehicles fixed or devices fixed by people who aren't really qualified. But I don't really buy that. I think you can deal with the qualification and the certification. So my view is it's basically a way to monopolize service and repair dollars. And I'm in favor of right to repair.
Great. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Mike from Northeastern Connecticut. A lot of interesting stuff there. Let's go next to Jude from Baltimore. Hey, Jude.
Oh, my God. Hey, what's going on, David? So today I have a question. I have two questions, if that's all right.
Sure.
So my first question is actually, you know, you mentioned that we could be losing the House and or the Senate in these midterm elections coming up. So what is the best piece of legislation or the best thing we could see before we possibly lose power in November?
So there's two different questions here. There's what would be the most impactful to the country and what might get Democrats the most votes. On the latter, I continue to think that some significant student loan forgiveness. And remember, Joe Biden can't just forgive all student loans. The best legal opinions I've read are that would need to go through Congress. That's my understanding. But significant student loan forgiveness, I think, would get a lot of votes for Democrats in November. If you're asking me what do I think is the one thing that would be most impactful to the country, it's the typical big issues everybody talks about: wholesale campaign finance reform, healthcare for all, serious climate change regulations and legislation. But those are not necessarily the things that would be most popular with voters.
Yeah, I agree. I think that a lot of people, what they see, they think of maybe one or two issues that they're really passionate about, and they don't take into account the entire focus of things. So I'm a student myself. I go to the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Okay.
So I'm a environmental engineering major, like chemical engineering, environmental track. So I care about climate change, but that doesn't stop me from, you know, thinking about other issues that are also important. And I think a lot of people got to do that. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then my second question is, do we still care about vaccine hesitancy? Is it still a very big problem? Because we're getting to the point now where it's been 25 months since COVID first really hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, we still have, you know, I don't know the statistics, but at least a quarter of, you know, African Americans or Black people not wanting to take the vaccine. And at least, I don't know, some maybe 20 or somewhere in the teens for white people. So are we still concerned about those people not getting the vaccine? Are they still hurting us? Or
yeah,
are we so far away from it that it's like, why is it not even that big an issue anymore?
I don't know the numbers that you just stated, but there's a ton of people that still refuse to get vaccinated. Here's my thought on that. At this stage of the pandemic, the vaccination becomes increasingly an individual decision. There's still some data that the degree to which unvaccinated people spread the disease is higher, but it's not like the be-all end-all where we say, oh, if you're vaccinated, you don't spread it. No, if you're vaccinated, you get much less seriously ill. So we're a little less concerned about the vaccine refusers for that reason. The problem is the vast majority of the vaccine refusal is based on incorrect beliefs. And usually when people are vaccine refusers, they also believe a lot of other crazy stuff. So we care about it because it's part of this kind of culture of ignorance and people who don't accept science and that type of thing.
Yeah, I agree. It's like that. It's like that part of like ideology where people think that, you know, grass is blue and then they vote for Donald Trump. And,
right.
You know, that's how we get people in the White House like that.
That's exactly right.
So yeah, exactly. On my campus, we have to wear a mask only when we're inside classrooms, but not when we're inside buildings or at the gym or, you know, at food places. So it's interesting to me because I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, obviously there's still a problem. Anyhow, we need to wear a mask, but we don't really have to wear it. So what's the point of these rules? And it's been 2 years, so it's just kind of jumbling.
It's not a totally coherent strategy. I totally agree with that. Jude, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, I appreciate it. All right, there's Jude. Oh, sorry. Jude was saying one last thing there, but I cut off Jude. I apologize for that. Thank you to everyone who called in. Sorry if I didn't get to you. We will take calls again. It's time for the Friday mailbag. Let's get to it. If you have something to say, hopefully something substantive, hopefully something relevant to the audience, hopefully something related to things that have actually been said on the show, unlike many of the emails I get, you can email info@davidpakman.com. Don't abuse it. Don't send too many emails or you'll get blocked. We'll start today with this is a little bonus. This one is actually from Facebook. I'm sorry. This one's from YouTube. This is from Rob. Rob, who says, Dave Pakman hates the God bless the USA. What a loser. Now, this could mean one of two things. And this relates to I've told you guys that something about Trump rallies in 2022 is really triggering to the Trumpists. I would cover Trump rallies in 2016. I would cover Trump rallies leading up to the 2020 election. Even in 2021, those weird Trump rallies, the Trumpists didn't really care about my coverage. They didn't seem triggered by it. In 2022, every time I cover a Trump rally live, I get a deluge of YouTube comments, Twitter replies, and emails from people furious with my coverage. Now, this could mean one of two things. Rob might mean that I hate the USA, which, of course, I don't. Or Rob might mean I hate that terrible country song that Trump plays at every rally that ends God Bless the USA or starts that way or is called that. I don't even really know. I don't like the song. So it could mean one of two things. I don't know which it is, but I appreciate hearing from Rob as always. Jeff wrote to me. This is fascinating. Jeff is a former Trump supporter. And Jeff wrote to me and said, Mr. Pakman, with great respect, I voted for Donald Trump twice. I was a moderate Republican with left social views, and I didn't realize just how much QAnon had infiltrated the party until January 6th. As a result of that, and I really like Kyrsten Sinema and Jared Polis, I will be voting with the Democrats until this rot has been removed. I'm worried about Democrats and independents not voting this fall because they might be mad about inflation and other issues. What can I, as a betrayed Trump supporter, do to help get the anti-Trump vote out in 22 and 24? Phone bank. Phone bank, phone bank, phone bank for any candidate that you believe is a sort of a swing district, an important seat in 2022. Jeff also said, I figured out about Trump's demagoguery on my own, but your show has helped me become more comfortable with the left. Thank you, Jeff. This is a beautiful email. Great to hear from Jeff about this issue. And this is a reminder. This stuff matters. People listen to this and we do have an impact. It is great to hear. Now, I know a lot of you will focus in on, as you can see here, where Jeff says he likes Kyrsten Sinema. And I know my progressive audience really doesn't like Kyrsten Sinema. Don't focus on that. Focus on the fact that this is someone who voted for Trump twice, who now is not voting for Republicans. That's still a good thing. Next email is from Ray Ray. This one's actually from YouTube. Ray Ray said, David says he doesn't care about Bible quotations and then quotes the Bible and gives passage location. As a Jew, David has not followed King David and yielded his will to Yahweh. He has rejected Messiah and the propitiation offered by Jesus as a blood sacrifice for sin. He is a child of wrath and unredeemed, a rebel against Yahweh, and one of them a lawyer asking him a question, testing him. Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law? And he said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. Okay, this is out of control crazy. But the one part I want to address is, do people understand that when I say, I don't care about the Bible, but for people who do, here is what it says. That is, I think, clear to most people. And the context was Madison Cawthorn. Madison Cawthorn had wrongly quoted the Bible. And what I said was, I don't care what the Bible says one way or the other. I don't care. But Madison Cawthorn claims to care, and his followers claim to care. So for the people that do care, here's what the Bible actually says. You guys understand that, right? That's not a double standard. Ray Ray, you got to get it together, my friend. Brandon wrote in about accountability. And Brandon wrote, David, I was wondering, why are Congress members allowed to lie without consequence all the time? Is there a way to hold them accountable for these lies, such as a policy that makes them come clean after proven to be wrong? To me, that just seems like a normal courtesy of everyday people. Thanks for your thoughts. Yeah, I mean, listen, Brandon's not wrong. It would be great if more elected officials did what I do on the show, which is when I know I've gotten something wrong, not buried on the bonus show. At the top of the show, I will say, guys, I got something wrong yesterday. Gals, I have to make a correction. But anything beyond that actually could potentially violate the First Amendment. So I'm not sure exactly what you have in mind, Brandon, but as a show of common decency, it would be great for elected officials not to lie as much. And when they get things wrong, to correct them as quickly as possible. Lauren wrote in about trans rights and critical race theory. Lauren said, good evening, David. This question may be a bit ignorant, and I've tried to read up on it without avail. My question is trans rights part of critical race theory, or are these two different issues? I assumed critical race theory was solely race related, but I hear all of these people associating them as the same issue. I appreciate your perspective. Thank you for being a logical voice in this illogical world. So, Lauren, let me give you two answers. The first answer is everything can be related. Any fight against injustice can be related. And to the extent that supporters of critical race theory and supporters of trans rights believe that both are frameworks for giving people rights and blah, 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 it all could be related. So I know that if I just say these are two different issues, someone will say, David, sir, or they might be less polite, you're being discriminatory by claiming that these are unrelated issues. Now, my opinion is these are unrelated issues. So you can always find some thread to link things together. You can link together, you know, Mandarin oranges and, you know, nuclear energy. I don't know. I'm sure you could. But these really are two separate things. Critical race theory is a subset of critical theory. Critical theory, a great framework for understanding literature, a great framework from the mid 20th century for thinking about a lot of different things. And critical race theory specifically wants to apply that to our understanding of race in society. And different people have different opinions on it. I'm not like big on critical race theory. Critical theory, I find fascinating. Postmodernism, I find fascinating. Okay, et cetera, fine. So that's critical race theory. Trans rights is about trans rights, and it relates to equality under the law. It relates to the bathroom stuff. There's the sports element of it. There's who can sue for gender discrimination. And that came up during the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings. So again, with the idea that CRT concerns itself with rights along race, and trans rights relates to trans rights, you could say there's some thread there. But yes, you're not wrong, Lauren, that there are two separate issues here. Swint wrote in about Social Security and Medicare bankruptcy. Swint says, Mr. Pacman, sir, I've been told many times by many people that Medicare and Social Security are going bankrupt. On your show today, you mentioned this is not true. Can you please elaborate on this so I understand better? Okay, so there's a difference between going bankrupt and headed towards insolvency. Bankruptcy is That's it. You're out of business. You can't pay. Medicare being bankrupt means they can't pay for anybody's health care. Social Security being bankrupt means there's no more Social Security benefits for anybody. If nothing is done with cost of living growing and baby boomers retiring, Social Security could get to the point where if nothing changes, they wouldn't be able to pay their full benefits to everybody. OK, so what does that mean you have to do? Well, there's a couple different ways you could do it. You could reduce benefits. You could make people wait longer to retire, or you could collect more money. And one of the simplest ways you can fix Social Security's insolvency that would eventually come and eventually is you raise the cap on which Social Security tax is collected. Right now, you only pay Social Security tax on roughly your first $130,000-ish. So if you make $200,000 a year, that last $70K, you're not paying into Social Security at all. If you make $1 million a year, that last $870K, you're not paying into Social Security. So there's some really small tweaks that could be made to fix the insolvency issue. Similarly with Medicare, with healthcare costs rising, baby boomers retiring, et cetera, if nothing is changed, Medicare could become insolvent, which means it would have a budget crunch, not bankruptcy. Really important to understand, not a subtle difference. Jim wrote in about the Will Smith smack and said, do you think the right wing is upset about Will Smith because they're confusing Chris Rock for Kid Rock? As funny as that is, Jim, and I've not heard that before, I actually don't think that's the confusion, but I love the idea. Very, very clever. And lastly, Patrick wrote in and Patrick says, question, watch your show sometimes. Curious, when are you going to discuss Hunter Biden's laptop? Like to hear your comments. We will talk about Hunter Biden's laptop when there's really something to talk about. There is an investigation into Hunter Biden's business dealings. They don't relate to the laptop. And I already covered it. That's really the story. And Hunter Biden has nothing to do with the Biden administration. So there's not too much to say about it. But if there's something to cover about Hunter Biden's laptop, and if Hunter Biden becomes relevant to what's going on politically, Joe Biden, something relevant, be sure that I will be covering it, my friend. No question about it. That's going to do it for today. We have a tremendous bonus show coming up for you. Become a member. Sign up at joinpacman.com. And remember, if you already have a membership, you can now gift memberships to others. Just go through the sign-up process. Check the box that says this is a gift. We have 600 people waiting for memberships who have requested memberships. Make someone's dream come true. Gift a membership at joinpacman.com. I'll see you on the bonus show.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
WRCT, in sound. From way out.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song
word. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Against Mr. Imran Khan, the Prime Minister of Islamic Republic of Pakistan, has been passed by a majority of the total membership of the National Assembly.
Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan is ousted, losing a no-confidence vote. He calls his removal a form of U.S.-backed regime change. Pakistani lawmakers are now meeting to choose his replacement. We'll go to Islamabad for the latest. We'll also go to London to speak with historian and author Tariq Alei about both Pakistan and Ukraine. Then to France, where President Emmanuel Macron is headed to a runoff election with far-right candidate Marine Le Pen.
Mais dans ce moment décisif,
at this turning point for the future of our nation, nothing will ever be the same.
We'll get an update from French journalist Rachaya Diallo in Paris about how France has a chance to choose progressive ideals over hate and division. Then to Texas, where a prosecutor arrested a 26-year-old woman for murder after accusing her of causing a self-induced abortion. After protests erupted, the prosecutor now says he plans to drop the charges. We'll go to Rocky Gonzalez, founder of La Frontera Fund, which organized in the woman's defense.
Lizelle Edeta's arrest is a prime example of how harmful anti-abortion and anti-reproductive rights legislation impacts low-income communities of color, and in particular along the Texas-Mexico border.
All that and more coming. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations says more than 4.5 million people have fled Ukraine since Russia's invasion began 46 days ago on February 24th. On Saturday, residents of government-controlled parts of eastern Ukraine were urged to evacuate immediately as Russia began a major offensive in the Donbas region. Satellite images show Russia has amassed an 8-mile convoy of military vehicles inside Russia east of the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv. Over the weekend, Russian President Vladimir Putin tapped Alexander Dvornikov to be Russia's new battlefield leader in Ukraine. The general most recently oversaw Russian troops in Syria, where he was accused of targeting civilians and medical facilities. In the Ukrainian city of Kramatorsk, the death toll has risen to 57 following a missile attack Friday on a crowded train station packed with civilians trying to flee the area. There were over 100 wounded. Ukraine and Russia have accused each other of carrying out the strike. On Saturday, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson made a surprise trip to Kyiv, where he met with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
And together with our partners, we are going to ratchet up the economic pressure, and we will continue to intensify week by week the sanctions on Russia. Not just freezing assets in banks and sanctioning oligarchs, but moving away from use of Russian hydrocarbons. And we will give you the support that you need, the economic support, but also, of course, the defensive military support, in which I'm proud to say that the UK helped to lead the way.
We'll go to London after headlines to speak with Tariq Ali. As the U.S., U.K., and allies continue to pour arms into Ukraine, Pope Francis has called for an Easter truce.
Si ripongano le armi. Si inizi una tregua pasquale.
Put the weapon down. Let an Easter truce start, but not to rearm and resume combat, but a truce to reach peace through real negotiations, willing even to make some sacrifices for the good of the people. Which victory will be the one that plants a flag on a pile of rubble?
In news from Russia, the Ministry of Justice has ordered Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and 13 other international organizations to close their offices